Good morning. My name is Joe. My pronouns are he and him. Hello to all of you on Zoom as well. It's good to have you with us. What if the darkness in the world right now is not the darkness of the tomb, but the darkness of the womb? This is the central question and metaphor of what Valerie Kaur calls revolutionary love. Is this the darkness of the tomb or the darkness of the womb? Darkness. We know a little something about darkness. Valerie Kaur framed this question in response to her experience of racial tension and escalating violence against black and brown people like her in the U.S. over the past two decades. Her memoir, See No Stranger, is filled with horrifying acts of violence, stories about these horrifying acts of violence against people in her Sikh community, as they were targeted by acts of domestic terror in the aftermath of 9/11, and throughout the rise of white supremacy and white nationalism. The darkness of that violence and terror and hate and bigotry. We're not so distant from that here in Canada either. Some of you have tasted that as well. Valerie also names the darkness of the climate emergency, the global immigration and refugee crisis, poverty, economic inequality, international wars, interpersonal violence. I don't have to give you the full list for you to know the breadth of darkness in the world that she is talking about. And of course, we also know darkness in our personal stories of grief and loss, the darkness of physical health struggles, family struggles, threats to our safety, financial insecurity, mental illness, loneliness, conflict, spiritual darkness, and so on. So I don't know what comes to mind for you, what darkness specifically you think about when you read this question. I do know that it matters. It's significant. It's heavy. Might feel suffocating at times. The darkness of the tomb. That image really resonates in its agony, its dread, its insurmountability, its finality. There's no coming back from the darkness of the tomb. And yet, Valerie points to that darkness, shares her own experiences of it, and arrives at this point of wonder. Is this the darkness of the tomb or the darkness of the womb? Is this the end, doomed and closed, or is this the beginning of growth and wonder, of possibility, the creation of new life? Both are filled with pressure and discomfort, to put it mildly. But the way that we hold the tomb and the womb are wildly different. I would say that Valerie Kaur is drawing from the same ancient wisdom that Jesus offered to Nicodemus in the gospel story that Ken read for us. Nicodemus came to Jesus with his own darkness, and Jesus met him with the same observation, that darkness looks different through the eyes of new birth. I had a good chuckle this week when I searched through my sermon archives to see what I had preached about Nicodemus in the past. These gospel stories are arranged on a three-year loop in the church calendar. So the last time we read this story in church was on March 8th, 2020, the week before everything started shutting down. The chuckle was this part. This was my closing line that day. May the Spirit endarken us and surprise us along the way. Yeah. My observation in that sermon was that Jesus flipped Nicodemus's expectations upside down. Jesus took his quest for knowledge and handed him back riddles instead. As we heard, Nicodemus came to Jesus at night in the dark. Nick was a priest, an academic, and his research, his careful research, had led him to take Jesus seriously. As the conversation opens, he seems to expect Jesus to affirm his scholarship, to congratulate him for being on the right path. Nick is in the dark, but he thinks he's seen the light of God, and he's asking Jesus to confirm what he's found. But instead of congratulating his enlightenment, Jesus offers what I called the gift of endarkenment. Jesus told Nick that he does not understand, that in fact nobody truly understands, that the mystery goes even deeper than what we can possibly know. You're looking for the truth, he said. You're looking for something solid that you can hold on to, but the capital T truth is that God is spirit, breath, vapor, wind. Truth is not solid. It comes and goes like the wind. Nobody knows where it comes from and where it's going. I quoted Barbara Brown Taylor, "You do not know," Jesus says to Nicodemus, "not because you're stupid, but because you are not God. So relax if you can, because you're not doing anything wrong. This is what it means to be human." The story, I said, invites us to not be afraid or ashamed of our lack of understanding, but to embrace the unknown as space where God lives. We are in the dark, but we don't need to be afraid because God lives here too. The darkness is actually fertile ground. It was a decent sermon. I'll include a link in my notes on the church website if you want to check it out. Glad it wasn't my best sermon. You're still waiting for that one. But then this was my closing prayer that day. May the Spirit endarken us and surprise us along the way. Amen. And that was when the darkness came, for real. These lights were shut off. This room was empty and dark, silent for months, along with everything else. Careful what you pray for. Sorry about that. So yeah, we know a bit about darkness. So today, 3 years later, when I come to hear that Nicodemus came to Jesus at night, I appreciate the reminder that darkness is not a new thing. The anxiety and fragility of not knowing are the human experience, as Barbara Brown Taylor said. Jesus did not reject Nicodemus because he got it wrong. He simply pointed to the larger truth, that God was doing something Nick had not even considered. Something brand new was coming into the world. Something brand new was being born into Nick himself, if he would allow it. If he would allow himself to be reborn, remade from top to bottom. If you want to see, you must be born again. Is this the darkness of the tomb, or is something new being born? Is this the darkness of the womb? That is the choice that Jesus is offering to Nicodemus, and by extension to all of us. There is no one right complete answer to that question, of course. I know it's church and emotionally we're supposed to say, yes, the darkness of the womb sounds way better. I don't want to die. I want to be remade. I want to be reborn. That's true. I do want that. But we are mortal, finite creatures. The darkness of the tomb isn't going anywhere. It is coming for all of us. Some of us are closer to that than others. I know this question sits differently with me now than it would have before my heart attack. How does it land with those of you who are significantly older than I am? And how does it feel to those who are younger? The truth is, as Forrest Gump says, it's both happening at the same time. There is something new coming out of every tomb. I've been to enough funerals to know this well. And I've been in a few birthing suites as well. And there is also blood spilled in that space. New birth is always a kind of death also. The tomb and the womb are connected, and not just by the neat rhyming metaphor. The wisdom is in the question. As Jesus said, new life comes in the choosing. A lot of us learned to put the emphasis on believing on the intellectual assent. If you accept these statements, if you can say the words of this creed, that's what it means to believe. But what Jesus is offering goes so far beyond that. It's about the choosing, repeatedly. It's in the trusting. It's in allowing the question to remake you, leaning into the possibilities that it offers. Would you believe if I told you that this darkness is not the end, that death and new life exist side by side, that the undoing is part of the remaking, always? Would you believe that? Would you buy into that? Will you trust that reality? This is at the heart of the Jesus story, obviously. We Christians are Easter people. The darkness of the tomb is the darkness of the womb. We know this. Death is here. It's unavoidable. And at the same time, new birth is also here. This is not a story of despair. This is a story of love. Some of you know the Tony Campolo sermon, "It's Friday, but Sunday's coming." Yeah, you've heard that one before. This is how God changes everything. There is light at the end of the tunnel, if you choose to see it that way. The darkness that we are going through right now, it may well be the darkness of the tomb. And at the same time, it offers us the opportunity to lean into the work of giving birth to the new thing that God is doing in our hearts and in our world. What do we do with that? What does it look like to be reborn, to be born again, to choose to be part of what is being born around us and within us? Valerie Kaur calls this the wisdom of the midwife. We breathe and we push. Two side notes before we get into that quote. One is that birth is complicated itself. The womb is, in this context, meant to be a sign of hope. It's meant to lighten our spirits, give us the hope of this light at the end of the tunnel. But we recognize that for reality, it's not that way for many people. There are those for whom thinking about the womb brings up feelings of what might have been, what they wanted, what didn't happen, what has happened and has been hard, all of those things. Giving birth is nothing we can take for granted, and it's not a given. So I don't have any answers to that, but I do want to name that we are holding that together. So if this is a difficult metaphor for you, know that we see you and care about you in this space as well. This isn't automatically good news in itself. I should also say at this point that I clearly don't have much personal experience with breathing and pushing in the literal way that midwives might talk about. So this is all secondhand wisdom from this point on. I will do my best to get out of the way and let Valerie do the teaching. I will say that she's not only talking about the kind of breathing that, I don't even remember how it goes, with the breathing rhythms that you learn in a birthing class. I'm past that stage of life now, thankfully. There's something for everyone here. We all breathe. It's not only that kind of rhythm of that kind of breathing. So if you're like me and you're like, okay, we hear that her instructions are to breathe, and of course this is just a human response. We breathe without thinking, and so instructions to breathe might sound like lightweight, airy fairy kind of stuff. True, there is a automatic breathing part here, but there's also this breathing that she's talking about grounded in the grit and toughness of the delivery room. Sometimes breathing comes easily, sometimes breathing is hard and heavy and ultimate strength. And that's the kind of breathing that she's talking about. Like I said, I'll get out of the way and let Valerie teach us from her book, See No Stranger.
Breathing is life-giving. In every breath, we take oxygen into our bodies to nourish and sustain us. We inhale the molecules we need. We exhale what we do not need. Breath is constant. Its rhythm moves within us, whether or not we are aware of it. Buddhist, Hindu, and many other wisdom traditions have taught conscious breath work for centuries. When we pay attention to our breath, our minds are called to the present moment. Not the past, not the future, here and now. Inhale, exhale. Breathing creates space and time to be present. Present to emotion. Present to sensation. Present to surroundings. Present to one another. Present to ourselves. Deep breathing and paying attention to sensations in our bodies as we breathe increases our resilience. Shallow breathing makes us more vulnerable to stress and illness. Breathing from the diaphragm engages the parasympathetic nervous system and vagus nerve, inducing calm in the body. It changes our blood pressure and heart rate and reduces the risk of inflammatory diseases, including those caused by social trauma and chronic stress. Breathing is perhaps the most universally available wellness tool. Try it now. Take one deep breath. Notice the sensations in your body as you do this. The ability to notice and slow down our breath connects us to a sense of agency. Even in dire circumstances, even when we cannot control anything else, we can consciously take one breath and then another. Breathing creates space in our lives to think and see differently, enliven our imagination, awaken to pleasure, move toward freedom, and let joy in. For those of us who live in bodies that are denigrated by society, breathing like this is a political act. The world sends a barrage of signals that our bodies, as women, people of color, women of color, queer people, trans people, and disabled people, are not beautiful or strong or worthy of love. Taking the time to breathe, literally and metaphorically, is a way to assert that our bodies are worthy and beloved. Loving our bodies is the first and primal act of loving ourselves.
Your breathing. In your darkness, however you named that earlier, how do you go about inhaling and exhaling, feeling the rhythm of fullness and emptiness, letting it come, letting it go? In Jesus' story, like most dramas, most of the breathing takes place off stage. But we do see him taking time off from his work, time away from his ministry, dinners with friends, encouragement to consider the lilies. Jesus' work was not efficient. He wandered all over the place. He did not solve all the problems, heal all the people. He left so much undone. He left so much for someone else to do. That's really hard for many of us. Life is short. There's so much work to be done. There's so many burdens to carry, so many people to serve, so much to give away. That's true, and you can't do it all. You still have to breathe. Here's Valerie again, speaking of her experience of giving too much of herself to a good cause.
I had been made to believe that overwork was the only way to make a difference. I had come to measure my sense of worth by how much I produced, how well I responded, and how quickly. I had worked for so long and so hard and at such great speeds that I had become accustomed to breathlessness. I could not remember the last time I had a long night of rest or gazed at the night sky or danced. I told myself that it was for good reason, that the need was so great and our work too important. Perhaps you too have felt this way. This is what I want to tell you. You don't have to make yourself suffer in order to serve. You don't have to grind your bones into the ground. You don't have to cut your life up into pieces and give yourself away until there's nothing left. You belong to a community and a broader movement. Your life has value. We need you alive. We need you to last. You will not last if you are not breathing. When we see something that beautiful, we call it breathtaking, but we really should call it breath-giving, my friend Rabbi Sharon Brous says to me, because when suffering constricts the heart, awe stretches it back out, making us more compassionate, more loving, more present.
This is just scratching the surface. This is the introduction to Valerie's teaching and what she's talking about when she invites people to breathe. We just don't have time to get very far into it here. Of course, breathing is only half. It's only part of the path of new birth. The other part is knowing how and when to push. Think about pushing in the context of labor and delivery for a second. I can feel myself shudder, and it didn't happen to me directly. I was just in the room, and it still left some scars. The literal pushing of birthing is a painful reality. The pushing of metaphorical new birth is also difficult, but essential. Here's Valerie again, this time from her Revolutionary Love training course.
Now, what does it mean to push? The push can mean many things. We're generally talking about pushing as this concentrated burst of energy, this focused energy to push something out into the world, to push ourselves in the process. But for the purpose of this lesson, I'm going to give you a very specific definition of what I mean by pushing. I'm going to be talking about pushing in the context of loving ourselves. So pushing as part of the process of transformation and growth. I am defining pushing in this way. To push is to choose to enter discomfort, to enter grief, rage, or trauma as part of a healing process. Pushing requires us to discern the right times to breathe and rest and the right times to push through painful sensations, emotions, thoughts, in order to birth new possibilities in ourselves and for others.
To push is to choose to enter discomfort, to enter grief, rage, or trauma as part of a healing process. And this, she promises, is part of loving ourselves. Here again, I'm feeling my inadequacy to help you know how to do this. This public format is not the right time and place for this work that is inherently personal and specific. So this morning, I'll just tell you what I've heard midwives say before in the birthing room. Trust yourself. You know how to do this. Your body knows how to do this. It knows what you need. It knows the next steps to take. It's usually even preparing for them before you have any conscious idea of what's happening. I think that's true of our bodies. That's true in my experience of the spirit as well. The spirit of God comes and goes even though we don't understand how it works, Jesus said to Nicodemus. And your spirit is connected to that capital S spirit. So as you breathe, as you push, lean into that, follow it, trust it, whatever that means. For me and for most of us, I suspect, that happens best in relationship. I'd be happy to recommend a spiritual director or a counselor who can help you to listen to the spirit, help you know when to breathe, how to breathe and push. I'm going to leave it there for today. We've covered a lot of ground and I didn't leave very much room to breathe, ironically enough. I still have a lot to learn for myself about this rhythm. But this has been a gift to me in reading and listening to Valerie Kaur, and I'll pass this gift on to you in these questions. Is this the darkness of the tomb or the darkness of the womb? And when is it time to breathe? When is it time to push? How do you keep those in balance? Because we need to do both. We need you to do both for your own good and for ours together. It's interesting to me that Nicodemus mostly disappears from the gospel story after this encounter with Jesus in John 3. He does come back, though, on the night that Jesus died. After the crucifixion, Nicodemus is one of the two guys who helps to deliver Jesus' body to the tomb. He's the one who shows up with the burial preparations, the mix of spices used to prepare a body for the tomb. I like that when Nicodemus comes back, it's at the tomb. It makes me think that he took Jesus' message to heart, that he entered into this darkness of the womb of rebirth. And so when the time for the darkness of the tomb did come, he was prepared for it. He was familiar with the ways of darkness, so he knew what to do with it, maybe even how to see that darkness as a friend. As we close today, I will not pray for your endarkenment. Don't worry. No shutdowns this week, please. But I will pray that whatever darkness comes your way, you will know the darkness of the womb when you see it, that you will have the wisdom and strength and spirit to breathe and to push. Amen.